You've heard that time is money. Well, consider this an investment on a way to building wealth that's always right on the money. We're sitting down with local experts that all have a mind for money.
Hello and welcome to A Mind for Money with Citizens Bank. My name is Timmy Stanifer and I am your host. And today with me, I have Scott. He is going to be talking to us all about cybersecurity and taking care of your information in the digital world. So Scott, it's great to have you with me today.
Well, thank you, Timmy. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. How about you tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, and let the people watching know why you're a good authority on these questions that we're going to have today.
Sure. Realistically, my name is Scott Knowles, and I'm the information security officer, and I work in IT here at Citizens Bank. And my role here has been, I've been here 5 years, but I've been working in cybersecurity for about the last 15 years.
Okay.
So it really stemmed from IT in general, and then took that over and concentrated more on the security side of the world.
Yeah, excellent. And as you might assume, when you're dealing with your finances, your personal information, cybersecurity is incredibly important. I'm sure pretty much anyone around for the last 10, 15 years has seen plenty of news articles or reports on different scams that have happened, people losing their IDs or having, social security fraud, tax return fraud, a lot of stuff where if you lose your personal information, people looking to benefit from that at your expense will do whatever they want with it then if they get a hold of it. Yep. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, is the steps that you can take as an individual to protect your information and make sure you're doing everything you can to diligently be ahead of the people trying to get your information from you. So yeah, let's just start by going over what is a scam. We hear the word scam all the time, not even just talking about cybersecurity or banking, but in the context of what we're talking about, cybersecurity and protecting your personal information, what is a scam?
Well, really what a scam is somebody is trying to imitate an organization and ultimately trying to get information or money from you.
Okay.
So it's just a group of techniques that people use to get something from you.
Okay. And
it could be personal information, could be banking account, it could be credit card information, or they could just be using you to gather more information for another scam later.
Okay. Yeah, so you may end up being the middle person without even realizing it, the middleman to someone's scam. So these cyber attackers, people who are committing these scams, what do they do to try to convince you as an individual to participate in this scam, to be compliant in what they're asking?
The biggest thing they really do is social engineering. So they're using psychology to try to figure out how they can get you to do what they want you to do,
okay,
whatever that might be. So they can use different techniques, but the big thing is they want to convince you somehow, whether they're trying to spoof a organization or something that you are into. I like to cycle or hockey. So a social engineering technique would be using something against me in cycling or hockey to get me to do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately the goal is to get me to respond the way they want me to respond.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, this scam is really old, but heard of the foreign prince scam. I'm a foreign royalty that's stuck here and I need someone's help to try to get back to my country, and I'm willing to offer you money to do so. Obviously, that one seems crazy nowadays, but that's, a classic scam, I guess you could even call it at this point.
And what they really do is they are trying to convince you, hey, if you do this for me, I will give you a lot of money. That's mm-hmm. a foreign prince scam.
Yeah.
Or they might use, hey, your grandchild or your child or your friend is in danger. So since they're in danger, you need to give me this money to help get them out of danger.
Yeah, so they figure out a way to trap you in the scam by an incentive, whether it's a monetary incentive that if you participate and are compliant, you'll receive part of that monetary incentive. Or like you said, in this type of scams where they claim someone's child or grandchild or relatives in trouble, they claim that you're going to have something negative happen to your family if you don't comply. And I know there are some other scams out there that can also take control or hurt your data on your device. I know I've, you know, people talk about something like ransomware, that, you know, I know we're not necessarily getting into detail about that now, but, they could be threatening your personal data, or, you know, maybe you have stuff on your device that you feel like you can't recover, and they ask for monetary compensation to give that information back to you.
There's a lot of different techniques that scammers or attackers will use.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely try to compromise your equipment so they could put malware or viruses on your computers, cell phones, and that's just used to capture more data.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about the data that they can use for other attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So they might want to, like I said, put some malware on your machine so that anytime you log into a website, it captures the username and password. It captures that data. Or you could log into your banking website and it would capture your banking because it could be a keylogger.
Okay.
So a keylogger is every key that you type on a keyboard. It just tracks that.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have all that information that you're using that you believe is secure,
mm-hmm.
because they were able to get that malware on your machine.
Mm-hmm. By you doing an action you weren't even aware of, causing that malware to be there is very likely the case, correct? Yeah. Where you're doing something that maybe seems harmless, or you clicked on a link that didn't seem like it was that suspicious, but by clicking on that, it allowed that software or malware to be put onto your computer.
And that's actually one of the easiest ways attackers use to get you to install something on your machine. It's they send you a link, and it might be a link, get $50 off of, you know, Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is click on this link. You click on it, it installs the malware.
Mm-hmm.
They might even give you, some of them might give you that $50 coupon for Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But $50 to gather all your information.
That's not too bad of a deal for them, huh?
It works real well for them.
So. Yeah. So what kind of things can we do as individuals to protect ourselves from these scammers, these people trying to do what they can to allow you to put their malicious software on there? What can you do to protect yourself?
The biggest thing is be aware. Scammers will try to push you to make a decision quickly, to understand something about what they're asking for, but put pressure on you.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing is don't give out any information if you didn't start the conversation, right? So if you didn't initiate it, don't hand out any information. And it doesn't have to be real critical information. It could just be some personal information. I'm going to be gone this weekend on a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
That type of thing that I post on Facebook now gives an opportunity for a scammer to use that information against me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real... important to not give out information about yourself.
Okay.
Another thing is, if someone's trying to pressure you, take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down. You know, that is the attacker's worst case scenario, is if you slow down, because then you're going to start thinking. Another thing is, if they're asking you to pay for something to get something back, that's a scam.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, if you pay me this money, but I'll give you this much more back later, that's a scam.
Mm-hmm.
Or gift cards. You know, you have to pay for something in gift cards. Nobody pays anything in gift cards.
Mm-hmm.
That the IRS will never ask for gift cards.
Yeah.
They don't
want your iTunes money to give you your tax return.
So none of that. So the reality is, looking at what they have and what they're asking for, take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any questions about it at all, ask somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the big ones that, you know, I've ran into a lot just working for the bank is you think of something like the grandchild scam. You know, a common thing that can occur is someone sends an email to an elderly person claiming to be their grandchild, saying, I've been arrested down in Arizona and I need to post a $3,000 bail. Please don't ask my mom and dad. I don't want them to know, but I trust you and I really care about you. And I was hoping you could help me out with this. And, you know, they put the urgency out there. Like you said, they utilize your information to trap, you know, to get you in the trap, whether, you know, in this case, it's the incentive of family, but then they put the urgency on, like, I'm in jail and I need to get out. And so they try to utilize the urgency of the situation to make you make a snap decision and not look into it further. And in that type of case, just the simple call your grandkid, call them on the cell phone that you know they have, right, and see and make sure they're okay. And that would can diffuse the situation immediately. So that's, I think, just an example that came to my head when you were talking about that.
And that's a great example, because another thing you can do is actually call the police department down in Arizona, wherever they're staying.
Yeah.
Don't use the person on the phone's number or the email that they send you. Mm-hmm. What you really need to do is look it up on the internet and call the main number of that police department.
Mm-hmm.
You do that, you'll find out, oh, this was a scam.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it, you can also inform that police department that they're using their department as the reference for a scam. So yeah, kind of moving forward here. I've heard it talks of cyber hygiene. You know, that's, you can get a basic idea of what that might mean just by talking about it, but can you go into detail about what is cyber hygiene and what you can do to accomplish it and maintain that?
Yeah, cyber hygiene, you know, it sounds like a kind of a big term, but the reality, it's doing some of the fundamental things that you need to do on anything electronic. The first thing is update your software. You know, if you have any software, whether it's on a cell phone, whether it's on a computer, tablet, go out there and run the updates. For instance, Microsoft, if you have a Windows machine, Microsoft puts out updates every Tuesday, or sorry, the first Tuesday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, sorry, the second Tuesday of every month. They put out updates and it updates all their equipment. So they're doing it that frequently. If you're not updating your machines, you're vulnerable. They're patching different ideas or different holes in their software that they know about. And they're also trying to find things that nobody knows about yet. So update your software. And that goes to your cell phone. Your cell phone, Apple or Android, they're updating those on a regular basis. So, you know, complete those patches, complete those updates, and be very consistent. That will help. That's one of the biggest things you can do. Another one is how you log into things. We have usernames and passwords. And some of us use the exact same username and password for every site, right? You don't want to do that. You want to have a long, you know, it's really ties to length of password and complexity.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a long password for every site, and you want each site to have a different password. So that's a challenge, but we'll talk a little bit more
we'll
about that.
We'll touch on that in a little bit, I know.
Install antivirus and anti-malware software. You know, you might have to pay $20 a month, $15 a month, but go out there and spend a little bit on that software to help protect your machine. Because when you get code that's malicious in nature, it'll take that code and it'll actually block it. So it'll protect you from that. So that's a good thing to do. Change, you know, this is another big one. Every piece of equipment that you get, you know, I just bought a new Alexa. It comes with a default password. So take that default password and change it.
Yeah, and that goes in hand with what you're saying before to make sure that everything has a strong enough password, and a default password is not going to be very strong.
Exactly. As an IT professional, what I do, somebody says, oh, this device is broken, I can't get into it. I just go out on the internet and I do a search for that device and I'll get the default username and password.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get into a lot of devices just with that.
Yeah.
So make sure that you're changing those default passwords. And then other things you can do on your network at home is make sure you add a firewall. You know, firewalls are really important to help protect from attacks from other countries, from other organizations.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that are just going out there and scanning the internet.
Yeah. Yep. So looking for vulnerable IP addresses or different, you know, access points for putting out malicious software or conducting their scams. Let's touch a little bit more on passwords. It's a, you know, a complicated topic. It's something that we all know about. I mean, we all have something that needs a password. As time goes on, and as you mentioned, as hackers are getting more sophisticated or scammers are getting more sophisticated specifically in figuring out people's passwords and tracking that, obviously, we're needing more complicated passwords each and every year, it feels like, and which it helps keep all your information more secure. What strategies are there for creating effective passwords and honestly keeping track of them all? Because that's one, you know, a big reason everyone uses the same password for everything is I can only remember so many things. So if I need a password with 15 characters and a special character and an uppercase and a lowercase and a, you know, this and that, how do I keep track of that across the 30 accounts that I have?
Well, if you only have 30, you're lucky.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I have something like 250 accounts just at work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great point. I work really hard to make sure my passwords are long. And when I say long, at least 15 characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that seems, oh my gosh, that's a lot to remember. But I make sure all my passwords are 15 to 30 characters in that range. And I have complexity, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and symbols. So by doing that, there's no way I can remember all those passwords. There really isn't. So what you can do is you can go out and you can buy a password vault or password manager. And there's a lot of different ones out there. Dashlane is one, 1Pass, LastPass. There's a lot of different vendors that have very good products.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of decide what platform works for you and how do you consume it. You know, I personally use LastPass, which then I can take on my cell phone or on my computer. I can access it both places. So it allows me to capture and manage my passwords. But the big key is tracking your passwords, not using the same accounts, you know, username for all my different accounts that I have.
Yeah.
Set up different ones, especially financially.
Yeah.
But it's putting that out and making it easy for me to understand what that means.
Yeah, that's a really good point. A lot of those companies, I would definitely recommend make sure you're using a reputable one if you're going to be using a password manager. All the ones that Scott has mentioned are reputable vendors for password management. But if there's another one you really like that we didn't mention, look into it first. I mean, if you're going to trust someone with all of your passwords for all of your valuable information, make sure you're using a reputable source for that for sure. So let's say you're thinking about all of the different accounts that you have. Like you just mentioned that you use a lot of different usernames for all of them. And let's say I've been using the same Gmail account for all of these accounts, because almost everything requires you to link an email, even if it's just for password recovery or something like that. Is that a good practice to be sticking everything under one email? Or what should I be doing instead?
It's actually a really bad practice. And the reason is, if you look at all the data breaches that have happened, what do they capture in the data breaches? Their usernames and passwords. Mm-hmm. So as an attacker, if I have a username and password, say I took it from Facebook, I now use that account and I try it on Twitter, or I try it on Gmail, or I try it on Amazon. So I'm going to use that same username and password multiple places to see if I get lucky and get in, right? So what I recommend is really taking a look at what accounts you're using and even take the next step. For instance, for financial or healthcare,
mm-hmm.
I have a separate email account and password for those systems. So the only place I ever use my financial one is at my bank. And then the only place I'm using my healthcare one, it's for my chart. So I can outline those pieces and then say, it's not floating out there. If it is floating out there, if I ever see it anywhere else, I know they've been breached.
Yep.
So it's mm-hmm. a little trigger for myself. Now, that adds more things that I have to keep in my mind.
Yeah.
Right? That's where my password manager also helps.
Yep. You know, you can use your password manager for email accounts too. It's not just for logging into sites like Amazon or Twitter or things like that. So, another way that's really useful, and another extension of keeping it's kind of like the idea of diversifying your financial assets. You know, you kind of got to diversify your digital assets in the sense of if one gets compromised, you're not losing everything. So it's kind of that same idea. Obviously, not the exact. It's not a one to one, but the idea that if one thing is vulnerable and that's where you're fully. Oops. If one thing is vulnerable and that's where everything is, then you're going to lose it all.
Right.
So. And then is there anything else I can do to help protect my email accounts besides using, multiple of them and making sure the passwords are complex? What else could I possibly do to help keep them as secure as possible?
Another control that you can put in place for, again, as many systems as you can, as many accounts as you can, is called multi-factor authentication. And that's made up of something you have, something you are, or something you know. So For instance, if you're logging into Gmail or your Google account, you can set up multi-factor authentication and it can send you a text. A text isn't the best one, but it works better than none.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
Right? So you could actually use a YubiKey or, you know, a physical token key as well. And in doing that will help protect your account. Mm-hmm. So if somebody does capture your username and password, they won't get that key, right? You can use Google Authenticator or Microsoft Authenticator. That's an app on your mobile device. And that authenticator just gives you a push token that allows you to, again, have another layer of controls or another layer of security mm-hmm. in that environment.
Okay. Excellent. So yeah, just really making sure that when someone, if they happen to get your information, they can't just log in just with your information. They also, that gives the extra layer of security where if someone in a foreign country is trying to log into your Amazon account and that's obviously not you and you get the notification, you can shut that down and then be notified that you need to change something, whether upgrade your password security or maybe change usernames or something like that. Kind of moving forward here, changing topics a little bit, you hear a lot about different scam techniques. One of the big ones besides social engineering, which you mentioned, another term you hear a lot is phishing. Can you explain specifically what is phishing and how do you protect yourself from that?
Sure. Phishing is when an attacker takes an email, typically. You know, it can be a text as well, but a message, and they send it to you trying to get you to do something.
Okay.
So they're trying to sell you on an idea. So I might be, I want to send you, you know, the Prince scam that you yeah. mentioned earlier. It yeah. could be that type of thing. I'm sending you an email to get you on the hook, right? So mm-hmm. I can reel you in and get you to do again what I want you to do.
Yeah.
So I might send you that email and it'll have some information that entices you to want to react a certain way.
Okay.
So the goal is trying to get you again to change your behavior to respond the way I need you to respond. Mm-hmm. And it could be clicking on a link. It could yeah. be just starting a communication.
That's a lot of the stuff we had already talked about, you know, using the bait basically of whether it's monetary benefit for you or something important to you, like your family member, to try to get you to engage with them, whether the engaging is clicking on the link, conversing, or cooperating, or even going all the way to, you know, sending a wire transfer or something extreme like that, you know, a lot of times being the end of those actions. We're kind of wrapping up here. How can we protect our important data? Like the vital records, you know, what can we do as individuals to protect that information that makes up how I'm able to do everything, like my social security number, date of birth, stuff like that?
Well, there's a lot of different methods. The first thing you really want to do is make sure you don't open up any emails or anything from somebody you're not expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you get this email, nobody's going to give you $10 million.
Yeah.
I would love that. Hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to do that, right? Never click on a link. Never click on anything that you are not expecting,
mm-hmm.
right? If you don't have a reason to get it, someone's trying to scam you.
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure that if it's something that is in an email, you're hovering over the links. You're looking at it and analyzing it, and you're not trying to just respond.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is all this data we have some really important data. Our pictures, our family pictures, our important health records.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that we want to take care of. So we need to identify what those are and make a backup copy of them.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Back in college, when I first had a computer, the real scary thing is I had this floppy disk drive and this floppy disk, and I lost my paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
Well, then you learn to make a backup copy. The same thing now is that case. We don't mm-hmm. have floppy drives anymore, but we have our data somewhere. Mm-hmm. How are we backing it up in case we get, you know, that disk gets destroyed or we get ransomware?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we putting that data so that we can actually recover it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. as we kind of start wrapping up here, I'm just going to go over some brief do's and don'ts. I know this is a little bit longer of an episode, but there's a lot of information to cover, and I think it's really important that we talk about it. So yeah, just some brief do's and don'ts here regarding your cybersecurity. I would say one of the first things is be well-educated on the person you're talking to. Do make sure you know who you're conversing with, and that goes into kind of a immediate don't. Don't start giving out information to people unless you have verified it. If someone is claiming to be your grandchild, call your grandchild. If someone is claiming to be from your bank, call your bank, and do this through numbers and avenues that you know are the actual proper way to get a hold of them, rather than just responding to the information that they gave you. Don't just email them back at their email. Don't just call them back at the number they called them back. Or that they called you out in the first place. I would say do make sure your passwords are complex and varied, that you are using different usernames, a variety of ways to log in to different areas, so that if one thing becomes vulnerable, you're not losing all your information. And don't stack up all your accounts and all of your logins under the same username, the same email address, because then that leaves everything vulnerable if one of those becomes compromised, even in a way that you weren't responsible for. And that happens, unfortunately. You know, companies get their data breached all the time. There's people who their full-time jobs are to hack into big corporations to steal data from them. So if you, you know, if that happens, and it does, unfortunately, and you haven't done necessarily anything wrong, but all your information is uniform across every different way to log into anything, then they can just start guessing and checking across every, like you said, across every major login. I would say, do utilize a password manager. That's a big thing that's becoming more and more important as complex passwords are becoming more and more necessary. That, you know, it may be strange to think about trusting a company with all of that info. I know that's kind of a hesitation that some people have when they think about a password manager. It's like, well, I'm giving all my passwords to someone. Doesn't that defeat the purpose? The whole purpose of those companies are to do this, and they are super heavily regulated. They are, you know, very closely monitored to make sure they're not losing your information. And because it's such a volatile thing to be a business, you know, such a volatile business market or market space to be in, that they have to be really closely watched and, you know, regulated for that. And I would say, again, don't click on anything, engage in anything that you didn't, like you said before, that you didn't initiate. If someone is initiating something with you and asking for information, don't just give that out. You know, don't click that unfamiliar link. Don't trust that. Don't just trust blindly that what is being sold to you or told to you is actual and factual. And that ties back to one of the other, you know, the first do's and don'ts I was talking about is verify the information and don't just, you know, trust what's going on. And with that, Scott, do you have any closing thoughts to kind of go over everything? It was a lot of information and it was a very chunky, meaty episode, but we kind of went over a lot there.
Sure. One of the things is get more information, learn more. So one of the things that Citizens Bank is doing for you, what you can do is go to citizensbank.bank/security, and that will give you some training, some information, and different things that you could actually sign up for and get alerts.
Yeah. So there's, you know, we do put out information on cybersecurity. I know the Wisconsin Banking Association, the WBA, mm-hmm. has different programs that they put out to inform people about, you know, specifically bank and money related ways to protect yourself. But yeah, just being educated is just such a big part of keeping yourself safe from scams, from people utilizing your information. Because if you don't know what's out there, it's hard to know what to look for. Like me, just being experienced in the realm of what scams are and kind of growing up with what I've been taught with scams and being pretty well educated by my parents from a young age of what to look out for, it's pretty easy when I get a scam email to be like, yeah, that's a scam. You know, and it seems like it should be second nature. But if you haven't been taught these things, if you haven't been raised in a digital generation, or even if you have and you just haven't been exposed to this information, yeah, $50 off of an Amazon order seems like a cool idea. You know, so maybe you do click that link, but obviously you want to get to the point where you're trained enough to see that stuff and think, no, that's clearly a scam. And I know that right. that's a scam. Or maybe I'm not sure, but I have the avenues to figure it out safely before I engage with it.
Exactly.
So yeah, with that, we appreciate you sitting through this episode. Like I said, I understand it's a little bit longer, but there is a lot of important information here. If you have any questions, feedback, anything you'd like us to explain a little bit more, or any suggestions for future episodes, please give us an email. You can email me directly at heytimmy@amindformoney.com. That's heytimmy, H-E-Y-T-I-M-M-Y @amindformoney.com. And until next time, we thank you for joining us. And Scott, thank you so much for sitting down and sharing your knowledge with us. And yeah, we hope you have a great rest of your day.